Thanks for downloading an episode of the Yarra Elders Precious Memories Project. This project was produced in the studios of 3CR Community Radio in Melbourne, Australia, with financial support from the City of Yarra. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, and we need your financial support to keep going. Go to 3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners are warned that this podcast may contain names, voices and images of deceased persons. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
My name is Georgina Lovett-Williams. I'm a Gunditjmara elder. I'm a mother, a grandmother, a great-grandmother, and an auntie to many. I was born at the Women's Hospital and brought home to Young Street, Fitzroy, right near Gertrude Street, in 1943. I hear through virgin timber talk the love song of a waterfall. I would like to state that I'm a sibling, one out of five. So I've had a large family and I've been lucky enough to be the youngest of the five, which meant I think I got spoiled quite a bit. My mother was a Lovett. My grandfather is a Lovett from the Gunditjmara country in the southwestern district. And my father is an Egan. He is also a Gunditjmara man from the western district. My mother, Gertrude Christina Lovett, they called her Gertie, came to Fitzroy with my grandfather. She had my first brother in Haywood. He was born in Haywood. And then the next four, we were born in Fitzroy, Melbourne here, at the Women's Hospital and lived in Fitzroy. So that was 43 when I was born, and be the mid-30s. And there red mangoes through the tree, a love song born upon the breeze. Mum was a great person for always returning to country. We did this on a constant basis. And my mother's visits were always the strangest ones. They were never less than 6 months. So visits, you weren't just there for the long weekend. And while we was back at country, we'd be sent to school. So we went to school and we'd lived a normal life again. Then we came back to Melbourne. And that just continued all the way through my life until my mother died when I was 15 and a half. So that was part of my life of backwards and forwards, which I thought it was a great life because I was connected to my country. She made sure we were always connected, even though we were living in Fitzroy. And it was a big effort for my mother to do all that, but she done it constantly. Her connection to country and family in country was never broken, not through distance or through lack of money to move. She would somehow get train fares and we would all travel up and then we'd come back. It wasn't an easy life for her at all, Fitzroy, in those days, because we didn't have houses. My mother rented rooms for us, and because they were also trying to take children away from Aboriginal women at that time, she was always on the move. We may only stay in an accommodation for 9 months and then Mum would just pick up and we'd move again. So during my very early years, I couldn't count how many houses we lived in. Could not count them. I've forgotten so many of them because we moved on a constant basis because of the conditions. And there was a lot of heavy work put on our people, you know, taking children away, as you know. She was aware of all those things happening and she didn't even take a pension until many, many, many years later, so that they wouldn't have an address on her. In her mind, she they're not getting my children. So we was always moving. Plunging over rugged rocks, hear the water sigh. Going back, I think there would be 11 or 12 families at the most in Fitzroy, Aboriginal families, when I was born here and growing up here and going to school here. And you all knew each other because they gravitated together, you know, and always spoke to one another and was kind to one another. And us kids naturally got to know each other. We'd play together and talk while they were talking. They were good people, the Aboriginal people here. The times were that stressed, but they'd always have time to play the mouth organ and have a sing-song. Someone would play a piano and somebody would be able to do something else. They didn't take burdens with them on a 24-hour day basis. They made things lighter. So our children didn't have that anxiety feeling that they would have been living under, really. They didn't spread it round to us. So we were very fortunate to have such strong people like that in our lives, you know, to guide us along the road. They'd all taught us how to fight. You go and fight your battles. Never mind about don't come home crying, you go fight your battles. But don't be rude and don't be disrespectful. That was what we were taught from them as well. You know, even though for hard times they didn't like your children being disrespectful or bad manners, that was not tolerated. And because we were such a small place, if we'd done anything wrong, they'd know in 2 seconds flat. They'd all talk to one another. There was no organisations then, remember, and people came to Melbourne for work. People drifted into Melbourne, into Fitzroy, because Fitzroy was the poorer section of Melbourne at that time, not like now. And people could rent a room or, you know what I mean, for a small amount or stay in the park. The men often just slept in the park, in the exhibition gardens, to try to get some work for the family. People drifted in. You couldn't very well drift into Toorak and you'd be thrown out in 2 seconds flat, you know, but being the poorer suburb, the outer suburb, but close to work. The Second World War was on then, remember, just finishing, so there was ammunition factories and all those kind of things that they could get some work and such. A lot of returned soldiers at the time. When I was growing up, we seen a lot of soldiers just coming and going, you know. Not so much into our house, but in the street walking, and because it was close to the city, Fitzroy. So you sort of seen a lot of people. We met a lot of different people that we just sort of grew up with. The Maltese came. They were a nice race of people, the Maltese. They were very much like us, gentle people. They were hardworking, you know. There was no organisations. There was a lot of racism from the police in those days when I was growing up. Our people always getting slammed into jail for some idiotic purpose that they thought up. And then, of course, when they got them in it, they'd get belted, and we lost a lot of our people being hung. They say they hung themselves and all sorts of things in jails. We lost a lot of family members that we all knew about, and we knew where it was coming from. So that was a great concern to us, not so much as young ones, because that wasn't our responsibility, but I grew up seeing the worry, you know, with my parents and grandfather, and, you know, they worried about these things happening to their own people. And, of course, we were never the right ones. We were always the wrong ones, as far as jails were concerned and courts were concerned and whatever. We had no organisations, and owing to these kind of things, the legal service was established in the hope of sorting this out and getting some justice for our people within prisons, within just the local jailhouse. So organisations started to spring up through the need of the disadvantages we were suffering under. Racism just followed Aboriginal people. It was like the non-Aboriginal people had a right to be racist against us, not taking into account once that they're on our country. What are we apologising for? That came from England. It was their set way of thinking of how they treat their poor, their people. And they brought that with them. They spoke big words, the nice big words and that, the government people, but it didn't filter down to the ordinary person. And we suffered deeply. This is heaven's maiden call, a love song of the waterfall.
my mother and my grandfather lived in the same house, and he joined the Communist Party. He said, at least they treat you as an equal. So there was quite a few of our people at the time, not too many, a handful, that also joined the Communist Party because they did treat them as equals. And, of course, our people who did join the Communist Party had another cross to bear. You know, that was held against them as well. Everything they'd done in those days, everything that they'd done and got, they fought for. And you suffered for it. My grandfather alone, he died coming from a Communist Party and was run over in the parade over here. And that was about 6 o'clock and that. And he was run over. Now, the truth of it is, there'd be about 3 cars on the road in those days. He wasn't a drinker. He wasn't running across the road drunk and didn't know where he was going. We put that down as a murder, of course. No police were going to accept that or anything else. They put it down as accidental death and whatever. Never found the person who hit him, of course. These are the kind of the real hardships that our people fought for in the early days of Pitroy. But we survived because the people that were here, they cared about one another and they were just trying to do the right thing and get jobs and get some work for their sons and daughters went into, usually in the ammunition factories or cooking or housework, mainly housework. My grandfather's sisters both went into housework, living in housework, you know what I mean, over in Toorak and wherever, South Yarra. That was common for our people to always be separated just to survive. And then our organisation started to grow. Then we got the Aboriginal Health Service, which was a wonderful thing because our people weren't going to the hospital even when they were should have been in there a long time ago with their illnesses. But on the verge of dying, they'd finally get to a hospital. But they weren't treated well in there either, you know. The racism sort of followed you everywhere. Even though there were good non-Aboriginal people around, they were certainly outweighed by the prejudice. You'd get 2 good ones and then you get 8 miserable people who thought they owed themselves a living. And not once did they think, why are we here? It was always, why are we, the Aboriginal people here? So that was sort of life with us, you know. So it wasn't easy, but our people stuck together and understood each other's problems in those early years. And we moved a lot. We were terribly overcrowded. Each family was more than overcrowded. For the simple reason you'd have somebody else coming down from the country to get work, to try to get on and get a job. They couldn't get work in their own country. That went with the colonisation of the white man who took everything. So it was very hard for all the people in. There wasn't any rich Aboriginal people here in the early years when I was growing up. We didn't have people who was even well off without being rich, just being well off. You're lucky if you could even rent a place, you know. It was very hard for our people. But we all fought hard. We're fighting people. We're all the same. We'll stick together for issues, for the better of the whole. And organisations came along and we worked hard on each one that we thought we needed the most, you know. The Brotherhood of St. Lawrence, they came about the same time as Father Tucker. He came to Brunswick Street, Fitzroy, the same time as our grandfather, about the mid-30s. He was a very good man. He was a man who really cared about the issues of the poor that they faced. He was an exceptional person, actually. And he used to come to our house to talk to grandfather to learn more about the Aboriginal people. He found grandfather a great man to talk to, who was, well, sensible, knew what his issues were, and was willing to share with him for the better of the people, because you got somebody with an influence who cared. So I was brought up with Brotherhood of St. Lawrence being a part of me, as well as just being family. That was part of my life growing up. And a few other families around here, we just loved it as young people. The Hudsons, the Greens, some of the families that lived in Gertrude Street here and the Aboriginals. Well, we loved the Brotherhood of St. Lawrence. They took us on excursions and that. That was a great thing for us in those days. We couldn't afford an excursion. So they done all those things. We actually went there to use the bath after school. They provided those kind of things. That was a wonderful place. Anyway, the Brothers St. Lawrence. My mother was a person who visited families a lot. She was a great visitor. We had the church going. We had the Doug Nichols Church going at the time. And that was a great congregation place. And people would discuss and have picnics and at the gardens, Fitzroy Gardens, Exhibition Gardens. And people who came down from Gippsland and other parts of the state and have a day out and they talk. So that was great. That was good for the young people to be able to go and interact. You know, I mean, you can't all be around your own family all the time. You got to know other families too. So that was done its job in that area. My brothers both played football. One of my brothers played for Fitzroy on one occasion there, but they wouldn't give him a clearance. He done real well on that day too. He got 3 votes against Divine in Geelong. So they were all quite good at sport. Even us girls were good at sports. We could all run like hares, you know. We were quite good at that. We were actually accepted when it came to sport. If you wanted to win a flag at your school, they'd always pick you then. You'd be okay. But we enjoyed that anyway. It was part of our life. But I watched the organisations grow and I watched the people grow with it. We had much more and more families all came and they just come. And I knew everything that was happening because I'd still live close to Fitzroy. If I wasn't in Fitzroy, I was in Carlton or Collingwood or, you know, in the area. And then I got married when I was 20 and I had my baby at 21. So I pulled out of a lot of things because I was being a mother and a wife. And then I got back into Aboriginal issues. I got a degree for welfare. I was interested in our people. I was always interested in our welfare, not mine, all of us. So I took that quite seriously. When you stop to have your children look after them, then you go back and you think, oh, things are not changing. You know, there doesn't seem to be change happening. The racism was still there, the struggle for identity, the just poor people trying to get a roof over their head as always. It didn't seem like we were moving and we had so many issues to fight for. So every issue was just went on and on, but I fought every issue. I'm a founder of a lot of our organisations that we've got. I've worked in just about all our organisations that we've got. So I know the social problems that come with anybody poor, doesn't matter what colour they are, would have the same problems. But we always had that racism on top of it, which made our struggle particularly hard, and always feeling alienated from your country, which is my country up there, or somebody's country over Shepparton, or somebody else's somewhere else. You know, and that was a big burden to our people. Because you didn't have cars and you had to get back to there to see what family's doing. A family member would die, you'd have to travel a long way. We didn't have anything. We also then started the funeral service. That was done by members of our tribe people, our tribal people, you know. It's in the museum now, that the funeral van that took people back home to country. Because for our people, in especially going back, it was important to go back to country for your spirit. And that was such an important issue. So death was an issue as well. Your problems didn't cease when you died. It was an issue of where were you going. So we had every social issue to refight our people. We've been, I think, a tremendously strong people all across Victoria and other states, to keep fighting the same issues, and we're still doing it. Justice issues, and they are justice issues. And without a lot of fighters, we wouldn't have been able to do it because you get tired. It's just life. You get sick. You have to stop and look after family. That's all part of life. So what we've done, we've sort of done things in generations. We pass jobs down to the next one to continue, and that's been a part of our Aboriginal way. You'd have one mother and father fighting for issues here and they're just getting old and sick. Right, come on. Come on, Bob. Get off your behind. Come on, Mary. Still work to be done. So we'd struggled really hard. But we did have some good times because our people knew how to make the best of little of what they had. They had sing songs. The families that we had here were great ones for getting on the piano and getting together and singing and have the cup of tea and, you know, make the scones. So because the house was so small, us kids were always outside. You couldn't all fit in one room, one dining room. But the music had come through and you'd also get to go in there and say hello to Auntie Mary and Uncle Jack and so-and-so, and they'd check you up and look you up and down to see if you're growing all right or whatever. You know, he's in the right place. So you had that connection with the Fitzroy families, and everybody watched one another and they watched the kids. For an example, I could go down the end of Fitzroy and go to the swimming pool and be walking back, and then you'd have an uncle come along. Does your mum know you're down here? You know? I said, yeah, well, I'll be checking with her to see if she knew. So you'd have all this getting checked on all the way through. And they were all entitled to do that to anybody's family. That was all part of the game of all keeping an eye on one another. So you got checked quite a lot of times going from A to B, I tell you. But it was a community feeling of you're safe. Oh, there's Auntie Joan over there. So I'll walk that way if the street looked too empty. You know what I mean? So that was a connection that you'd have no problems being able to do in Fitzroy. But the people of Fitzroy now, and especially the older ones, I think we should feel quite proud of ourselves because we kept that in the hardest time and we built it in the hardest times to what we've got now, and the education that our young ones have got now is just marvellous. And I take that back to the very hard yakka of our older ones who worked hard and they taught us to work hard. So I'm grateful for that learning. That's always been in us. I wouldn't know how to feel any other way. I wouldn't know. You come from a family that fight issues, and it's part of us. I've seen my, you know, grandpa and my other families and people fight on country from the time I was growing up, because I'd be living there. I didn't live in Fitzroy all the time. I'd be home at there for 6 months there, and maybe 12 months we'd go and live in Portland, we'd live in back in Conda. I mean, I was just part of all that, and I watched it. Having nothing, that doesn't mean anything, because if there's an issue, you don't agree to it. If you don't agree to it, you don't agree to it. You don't have to be rude about it, but we're very stubborn people, believe me. We don't agree to something, and that's it. There's no deals. We don't make deals with governments. It's not what we do. It's our way or no way. That's it. They haven't beaten us down to that. You'll do it just because we've said so. That never worked with us. And we fought. We had an MRL of war up there. We even had to fight our own people, the poor people, who were sent here from the Yarra to come up to try to track us down over our own stony country. But as my Uncle Mick, my mother's brother, said to me one day, don't blame them. It wasn't their fault. They threatened to bash the children's heads against the trees. They were forced into coming up to our country to try to track us. And as a Ganichamara man, he says, don't blame them. So that we never got the wrong impression. And I admire that, you know. To me, that's a fighting spirit. You don't make excuses and blame them. It wasn't them. It was the situation that they were put into. People shared their joy too. I mean, they're quite happy to sit and play the piano and sing a song too, just as easily as moan about what the government does, you know. We always kept a balance. And I think that balance that we kept was good. I mean, in my times, I grew up through the gangster times as well. You remember, we had, you name it, there was the biggest gangster you ever seen. We were running in Fitzroy. So you had all elements of a lot of scum, believe me, all in one area. So you had to segregate yourself from a lot of things because it wasn't allowed within our family and with our culture. So you were learning everything. You had to learn to fight because there was a lot of fighting going on. You had to know how to laugh and dance and smile, but you also had to know how to fight too. You had to learn all these things. Fitzroy was overcrowded. It was a poverty-stricken place. Fitzroy was, you had hard people, but they were happy people. They didn't walk around with their misery on them. They just went on and got ahead with what you got to do. If you walked around Fitzroy, there was factories in every lane, huge factories. Big factories like McRobertson's and, you know, huge factories. So people migrated to this area. So it was a really multicultural place to live. But all these things were part of Fitzroy. You were mingling with all these different nationalities, which was alien to us Aboriginal people. Because we were a people that stuck together. You know, we weren't great ones for roaming the country and the world, you know. So you learn to intermingle with other nationalities. So it was an interesting place. A love song of a waterfall.
Been listening to an episode of the Yarra Elders Precious Memories Project, produced in the studios of 3CR Community Radio in Melbourne, Australia. For more information and to listen to other episodes in this series, go to 3cr.org.au/Yarra Elders.